Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Welcome to a special edition of The Final Table. Hi, this is Paul Harrah's. Dennis Phillips and I are both traveling this week, so we're going to bring you more of our interviews recorded a couple of weeks ago at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas at the 2011 NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship, including one of the first interviews with Peter Eastgate, the guy who took down the main event of the World Series of Poker down in 2008. He came in first, Ivan Demidov came in second, and my partner Dennis came in third, launching him to poker superstardom. In fact, all of them. And then Peter, famously last year, took a hiatus. He quit poker. Didn't announce it was a hiatus, just said he was quitting it. In the interview, you'll hear us talk to him about why he did that and why he came back for an EPT event recently and for the NBC Heads Up. Also, you're going to hear from Seth Polansky, who's the communications director for the World Series of Poker. We've got their circuit event coming to Harrah's St. Louis in just a week and a half. March 31st will be the date of the first event, and then April 1st, the first ring event, going right through the first 2 weeks of April with three events every day and hundreds, if not thousands, of poker players converging on our town to play at the World Series of Poker circuit event. Seth Polansky on that and more from the World Series of Poker headquarters. But to start things off today, Jason Alexander. Yes, George Costanza from Seinfeld, who is affiliated as a, quote, friend of poker stars and was invited as one of the celebrities to play in the NBC Heads Up at Caesars Palace. And we caught up with him just after he was eliminated.
Thank you very much for joining us. Just got done with a match. Can you tell us about it?
It was brutal. It was brutal. Other than I enjoyed the view.
Because you were playing Liv Boree.
Yes, indeed.
I think as anyone would.
She's a lovely girl. She really is. You know, I can't tell you offhand if I played good, bad, or indifferent. I can tell you that she was on the right side of the table. By her own admission, she was just getting gorgeous, gorgeous cards. And my average hand was like a jack six. And, you know, it's enough to putz around with, but you can't push it hard. And, you know, once she started exposing the streak she was on, I went, boy, I better not fool around here unless I've really got something. There was one that I had an ace nine suited that looked pretty after the flop. The flop was king king eight, and I didn't. I thought she might have had a weak ace or maybe a small pair or something. But I pushed hard on it, and she she had flopped a full house.
Ouch!
So it's a little hard, and she was just. I'm pushing and she's calling me, and I'm pushing and she's calling me. She just dragged me under like the little hound I am.
You picked the wrong day to go card, Dad.
Yeah, and then, you know, my big out was I had pocket queens, and she pushed me all in, and I snap called to her A6 suited, and bang, flop is A6, whatever.
Yeah.
The rest is history, as they say.
Some days it don't pay to get up in the morning.
Now, we've seen you at the World Series, of course, and we see you at the NBC Heads Up every year. When else do you play poker and where?
You know, I'm a pretty quiet player. I play a lot online for Poker Stars. I would say 80% of my play is online.
What do you play online?
A lot of six seat sit and goes. A lot of heads up, actually. I like to play heads up online. Hmm. And then I'm in a recurring game with Ray Romano. It's a fun game. And you know, I'm not a regular in anybody else's game, but there's always games and charity games, and you know, so you're out there.
Speaking of the charity, we've been in several different charity ones. Yeah. You, Brad Garrett, a number of other guys that are always willing to donate their time and energy to for good fundraisers. Do you have any others coming up? Any charity events? Anything like that?
Yeah, actually, we do. I think the next one for me is March 13, maybe, or 14. It's the We Spark organization is a cancer-related organization that began with a wonderful girl named Wendy Sperber, who was taken by cancer about, I'm guessing, about 10 years ago. And It's become a wonderful tournament. I think it is. It's got my name on it. I think this is the fourth or fifth year we're playing, and it brings a nice crowd out. So, fun.
Yeah, it is. It's always good to do those things. Yeah, I'll tell you. I've been lucky enough to do some things with Walter Reed and some of the other charities,
absolutely.
And it's just so much worth it. Absolutely.
It turns our vice into something worthwhile, doesn't it?
Yeah. There you go. Absolutely.
Absolutely. When you play in the Romano home game, what's the game?
Ray's got an interesting structure. He does. He's got a large table, first of all, so there could be 12 guys at the table, which is fascinating right there.
No kidding.
He plays two tournaments with a cash game in the middle. So, you know, it's a several hundred dollar buy-in with rebuys in the first tournament. The blinds change every 12 minutes. It's mayhem.
It's just real poker.
It's mayhem.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cash game goes for about an hour and a half, and then he plays, a second tournament, same style. And it's, nobody's throwing more than $2,000 around that night. So it's friendly.
Are you crushing it?
That's actually a very tough game. And the reason it's a tough game is there's a lot of guys that'll play silly hands, far beyond what you should play. And they're going to catch something. So unless you flop the absolute nuts in that hand, there are routinely, out of 12 guys that start the hand, there are 10 that see a flop and 6 that are playing the turn. And you go, it's...
Yeah.
Now it's a freak show.
Yeah, so. There you go. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
It eliminates it. Would you guys actually sat down in a game last night? I wasn't lucky enough to be here. Playing here at Caesars at the cash game.
Yeah, after the draw party.
Yeah,
we came over here to the poker room, and Jason was sitting at the table with Joe Hashem and a couple of other guys. Eric Morris from Bluff Magazine was there, and Donnie Peters from Poker News was there, and eventually we were joined by Chris Moneymaker and Jason Mercier. And Scotty Lazar, and Maury Escandani, who produces this whole festivity.
He can play some cards,
today.
Too.
Yeah. Yep. All sat down. And we had a really high-stakes game of 1-3 with a $6 button straddle and a 500 cap.
It was brutal.
It was fun.
Brutal.
I thought it was a tremendously fun time.
It was actually a lot of fun because there was silly betting going on. You know, run it. There was one where they run it 5 times.
Yeah.
The dealer had to love you.
Oh, my God.
There was one hand where they ran the entire board, not just the turn and river, the entire board run 3 times. And when they said that, the dealer said, really, the whole board? And he checked the stub of the cards. He's like, do I have 15 cards left? He couldn't do the math quickly enough. But it was really a lot of fun.
It was a fun.
And then Jason got up and left right before the bad beat hit.
Oh, that's my... See? My mojo isn't worth it.
When you run bad, you run bad.
No, I left, 300-400 up. It was I had been up at that point for 21 hours, and I thought, it's maybe the responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
Damn that maturity of mine.
I knew we were going to have a fun night when, on the very first hand, Jason raised it to $10. It's a 1-3 game. He made it $10 in middle position. It came around to me in the small blind. I look down at 7-deuce offsuit. We're playing the 7-deuce prop. I make it $70 because I don't want anybody in there. I'll just take it down. Everybody folds. It comes around to you, and you shot me a look.
Right. Because I think I had ace-queen, and I'm going, what could he have? What is he going $70 pre-flop on a 1-3 game?
And he mucked, and everybody threw me their red chip. So
I thought he's got to have kings, he's got to have aces, he's got, whatever it is.
Yeah, the old 7-deuce prop.
God bless.
Now, I got to ask you a showbiz question.
Sure.
I think the first time I ever saw you perform was 25, maybe 26 years ago.
All right, sir.
In an off-Broadway show called Personals.
Yeah, Personals was 1986 or 7.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Down at the Minetta Lane. I remember it well.
Yeah, and I was very impressed with you. I'd never heard you that night,
but you
sang and danced and acted up a storm.
I earn my checks. That's what I do.
So how come you don't go back to the theater?
I'm very much a part of the theater. I am the artistic director of a theater company out in L.A. called Reprise that does musical revivals. And I've never strayed from far from the theater. The question you're asking is, why am I not back in New York?
Well, I guess, when I meant theater, I wasn't thinking of L.A.
It's really a family decision. When Seinfeld ended, my inclination was to go back to New York and resume that career. And my wife very astutely pointed out that you really don't spend quality time with your children when you're doing that kind of a schedule. It is, you know, and people outside the theater go, come on, you're working 3 hours a day. How hard can it be?
Right.
But you've switched your life around so that your peak energy is at 8 o'clock at night. And in order to do that 8 times a week, you have to be fairly monastic about your voice and how much energy you put out. So it's not only the opposite of a kid's schedule where they're coming home from school and you're going off to work, but you're working weekends, you're working holidays. Anytime they have available where families get to be families, you're going to work. So I thank God for the Seinfeld show. Not Steinfeld, by the way, but Seinfeld. it was able to... You know, had the luxury of making the decision to be a dad rather than go back and try and be a working actor 8 days a week.
So in addition to being the artistic director of Reprise, have you done stuff as on stage
runs? Yeah. I haven't gone back to New York, but Marty Short and I did the producers for the better part of a year in L.A. You know, my average...
I'm guessing you were Bialystock.
I was Bialystock. He was Bloom. You know, I would say when I do a show in L.A., the average run is somewhere between 2 and 5 weeks. And, you know, everybody can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. What else is
I got one coming up, as a matter of fact. I'm going to do a wonderful Neil Simon play in L.A. Prisoner of Second Avenue is one of his plays that actually has become amazingly relevant again. It's about a guy who, you know, a middle-aged guy who thinks his career is solid, his family's solid, and... loses his job, his house gets robbed, and he has a nervous breakdown all in about a period of 2 weeks. And other than the price, you know, he lists the price of what things cost in the play. If we changed the prices of things, you'd think it was a play written yesterday.
Yeah.
It's incredibly relevant and very funny. So,
who's in it with you?
An actress whose name you won't know, but you'd know her face in an instant. An actress named Gina Hecht was one of the stars of Mork and Mindy. I think where people mostly remember her from is back in that movie Night Shift with Henry Winkler. And she played the gal that Henry was engaged to that kept trying to lose weight and was always on the exercise bike. And,
mm-hmm.
She and I have been, we have been best friends since 1985. And we've talked about doing this play for 12 years, and we just went, come on, it's time, let's go do it. So
I don't mean to drop showbiz trivia, but I remember her from Evening at the Improv.
There you go. Wow.
No, okay, now I'm impressed with that.
That's very impressive, by gosh.
Yeah. Remind me, get a life.
Yeah.
And what else are you up to soon?
I've got, you know, it's a crazy time. I've got a film that we've been working on for about 4 years that I'm supposed to direct. The latest word on it is the money is there. That's usually the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
The money is there. The money is contingent on casting, and so we're out to actors that we think are right and meaningful, and if we can put our cast together, we might shoot that this summer, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
And I've got a pilot script that I wrote for CBS that they liked very much, but it's a dramedy. It's a little bit on the fun side for an hour, and their pilots went very dark this year, so they said, we love it, and we'll stand behind it, but go shop it out there because we can't put it on our air. So we're out shopping this kind of wonderful series that could be that I like a lot. I'm hoping we set that up somewhere.
Do you miss TV?
Yeah, sure. I miss the regularity of it. You know, it's before I came out to L.A. and before Seinfeld, when I was always working in the theater, I had the actor's equivalent of 9-to-5 jobs. I did not spend a lot of time unemployed or between jobs. I like to just keep it going. And the truth is, an actor's career is more like mine now than it was before. You do something, and then you may be down for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and then you do something else. So having a series, it has that kind of a nice regularity to it. It's usually interesting work. I've been lucky enough to work with people I've enjoyed, and for the most part, doing stuff that people have liked. So, yeah, I'd be happy to go back. But, you know, by the same token, it's... be careful what you wish for, because it's those long hours. It's, you know, 5 a.m. calls till 11 o'clock at night, and, you know, you're grinding it out, and, you know, there's two sides to every coin.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, you expanded. You did the Criminal Minds episode that one time, which I thought was just excellent.
Thanks.
And that's something that's not a regular series, but it's got to take up the time, like you were saying there. Are you going to get into more dramatic-type roles, or are you looking at something
I will
like that?
If they let me, Dennis. yeah, you know, the funny thing is... when I was I was an acting student in college, and prior to, I would say, the middle of my college years, I didn't think comedy was my thing at all. I mean, I had done some, but it wasn't my calling card. And I tended to gravitate towards kind of big dramatic roles, you know, and thought that was where my niche would be. And all of a sudden, all this comedy stuff started coming my way. Yeah. And I said, well, I guess I should rethink this a little bit. But the dramatic work is actually always fun, always exciting. And it's actually, I don't mean to denigrate guys that mostly do dramatic work. It's easier, especially if it's well-written. You know, a well-written dramatic script, any decent actor should be able to bang their way through it. But when you've got a comedy ball, that's a particular set of skills. And people get it. I mean, if you look at all the films and TV shows you've seen that are purported to be comedies with decent people that don't quite make it, it's because it's a really hard thing to do.
Yep. That kind of rages in it. I've always been curious. With the show you guys did, when you get a Robin Williams, he's always talking about all the ad-libbing he did and everything. Like, how many of these things did you do in one take? Did you ad-lib? Did you do two or three different takes on your different episodes?
On Seinfeld, people are always surprised to find that it was not ad-libbed because it seems very improvisational.
Very
loosey-goosey.
Very natural.
Seinfeld was filmed in front of a live audience, so the process of that is different from a single camera show. You rehearse it like a play, and during the days of rehearsal prior to the audience coming in, we had tremendous leeway. We could make suggestions, we could change words, we could try all kinds of things. But once we got an audience in front of us, it was expected that the script was locked. And, you know, you could fumble a word here, a word there, but you were doing entire scenes in one take because you had four cameras doing. It was like doing a scene from a play. And you do multiple takes, and in between takes, the writers might circle the wagons and go, hey, let's work on this, let's change this, let's do that. But it would be a lie to say it was improvisational. What Larry David's doing now is with Curb Enthusiasm is totally improvised. He writes a storyline and no dialogue. So every word that comes out of everybody's mouth is improvised. But
and how have you liked doing that when you've gone back on the show, like when you did the Seinfeld reunion stuff on Curb?
Yeah. I like it very much. Some people get very intimidated by it. It can be intimidating.
Oh, I can see how it would be.
Yeah, it's a free-for-all. And truthfully, there was, with the Seinfeld arc in particular on Curb, we were concerned. You know, it's hard enough when two people are in a scene and they're making up dialogue. If there's five or six people in a scene, you know, it's just a cluster. You don't know what's going to happen. What was amazing is the five of us had such great practice and chemistry from spending almost 10 years together doing this stuff. You almost thought it was scripted. We kind of innately knew who was going to speak when and which direction somebody was going to go. So it was it was pretty miraculous. But I've always enjoyed improv work, and particularly the way Larry sets it up. It's, you know, a child could do it. It's ready to go.
That timing is key, and it was clear. I mean, obviously, you're shooting multiple takes on a show like that. You're not doing it live, so there's any opportunity to go back and say, let's try that again, and you come in a beat sooner. But the chemistry that had been there before was so apparent in what came out on the air. It was great.
Yeah, it was, thanks. And amazing, actually, because, you know, the people ask us all the time, are we as friendly in life as we are on the show? And the truth is, I don't want to shatter any illusions. We're not. We were, I think working people understand this, we were workplace friends.
Mm-hmm.
We had this tremendous relationship at work. We loved working with each other. We worked together really well. But we didn't shoot a show on Friday and then say, hey, let's go have dinner tomorrow night. You know, we kind of all went to our own homes and did our own things. And when the show ended, we had no real history of being social friends. And so Jerry and Michael went back to New York. Julia and I hang out in L.A. But everybody's kind of got their own life, and we see each other or speak to each other rather sporadically. So when they said, hey, let's all get back together and do this, I think we all went, I don't know if we can. You know, it's been 10 years. Who knows if that old magic is there? And it was lovely to find out that it really was there.
Yeah.
All right. Anyhow.
Oh, I have one show.
It's like you guys.
Right.
There you go.
You know?
Absolutely.
We're together 24/7.
There you go.
Which bothers his girlfriend and my wife
endlessly.
No end.
Yeah. But the bunk beds work out well.
That's no problem. As long as they're reinforced.
Last show biz question.
Yep.
Why can't anybody in Hollywood make another good poker movie? It's been over a decade since Rounders.
Yeah. I don't know why. I was part of one that had a really interesting idea, and in retrospect, was destined to not work as well as one would think. I did one called The Grand. I had a very minor role in it, but it was an improvised poker movie with you know, storylines that were sort of plotted out, but no actually written dialogue.
Was this Eric Bana and Burt Reynolds?
No, it was not. It was Cheryl Hines, Ray Romano, Woody Harrelson. A writer-director named Zach Penn was behind the project. And the gimmick of it was that it was about a World Series-esque tournament. They had engineered it so that certain characters would be playing the final table. But the gimmick of the movie was the final table was real. So you didn't know who was going to win. They were going to play a real tournament, and whoever won the tournament, that was going to be how the story ended. And the truth is, the least interesting ending is what happened, because the least, not the least interesting character, but the least interesting storyline for a win is what occurred. And the audience doesn't know it's real,
mm-hmm.
and they don't care that it's real. They're just there to see a movie. So it was, in retrospect, it was an ill-advised idea. But, you know, it's hard to capture the spontaneity and the... I frankly don't know how anyone sitting in the room that we were just in who's not... You know, got seeing the table cams. I don't know how they watch the game with any sense of excitement.
Yeah.
You know, what's so great about watching this game on television is you can live it with the players.
Right. Yeah.
But if you don't have that experience and know that it's real and spontaneous, which we can't convey in a motion picture, it makes the plotting of the movie incredibly important. I don't think anyone's come up with a plot that engages characters or twists and turns that are so intriguing that it makes for a good movie standalone. Forget the fact that it's even poker. But poker's actually very limiting as a plot device.
Yeah.
You know? It's good for a scene in a Bond movie, and that's about it.
What do you think would be more annoying, having somebody standing over your shoulder watching a game or being the person who's standing over your shoulder watching a game without hole card cams?
Oh, I honestly, if that game's going on and I can't see what the cards are or something, I'm out at the blackjack table.
Absolutely. You know, but here's the converse of that. I swear this is a true story. I was playing a small tournament at one of the card houses in Los Angeles. And we sit down, everybody, hello, how are you? Hey, I think I'm in sixth position, so the guy to my left is in seventh position. And the first hand is dealt, and it's small blind, big blind, fold, call, raise, call, comes to him, and he goes white. And he goes, wait a minute. I don't know what everybody has. And we looked at him.
Oh, no way.
I swear to God. And we looked at him like, what are you talking about? And he said, and he had some accent, I don't know what it is. On the TV, in the corner. he thought the players... could all see that, and that we were wagering on, okay, well, we know what everybody has, but I'm wagering against what will come next. And we got hysterical, and I'm telling you, I thought he was going to drop dead in his seat. He didn't make it past the first, you know, first blinds. That's the power of television.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say this. That would make the game easier.
Oh, yes.
You think?
If I had that edge today, I would have stomped that girl. Oh, my God.
Awesome.
Well, Jason, it's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We've been looking forward to doing this for a long time.
Any old time. Anytime I've been defeated by a small British girl, you have my complete attention.
Jason Alexander joining us at the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championships a couple of weeks ago at Caesars in Las Vegas. With Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips, I am Paul Harris. We are looking forward to the World Series of Poker Circuit event that's coming here to Harrah's St. Louis starting on March 31st. And if you come into Harrah's Poker Room between now and then, you can register for the big tournament package giveaway, which includes a seat into the main event, which will start on Sunday, April 10th. Also, you'll get a seat in five other events going on between April 1st and April 10th, and another ring event on April 11th. Five events, any ones you want, and there will be three tournaments a day, plus you'll get a seat in the Greg Raymer Fossil Man Poker Training School that's going on here at Harrah's St. Louis on Saturday, April 9th as part of our main event weekend in the Harrah's Ballroom. One person's going to get that whole package. Second and third place are going to get a seat in the main event and a seat in Greg's Poker Training School. And seven more people are going to get seats to learn from the 2004 main event champion, Greg Raymer. If you want information on the Fossil Man Poker Training Day, go to fossilmanpokertraining.com. You can register online, and if you haven't done it yet, you can still do it in person when you come here on April 9th, or do it in advance right now. And for information on all the tournaments that are coming up here at the circuit event at Harrah's St. Louis, go to harrahs.com/STL Poker. We're looking forward to seeing you. Dennis and I will be here for most of it, and we hope you will be as well. Get your hotel room, get your tournament information, and get all the rest at harrahs.com/STL Poker. And we'll be back with more of the Final Table right after this on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast, which you can subscribe to for free via iTunes or listen to anytime via Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net, the site that I play on. I want to talk to you today about the online home games that PokerStars now has, the only site that has it. Where it is, you can now take the experience of home games online. PokerStars Home Games lets you create and manage your own private poker club to play online poker games of your choice with just your friends and at your own schedule. Total freedom, total everything. Create a club is easy. You pick a club name, you get an invitation code, and you'll be presented with your own exclusive poker lobby that you can customize with the private home game tables and tournaments of your choosing. Inviting the friends is simple. Just send them the ID. There you go. This is something you totally control, so it's your friends, your schedule, your type of game, your type of stakes, the whole bit like that. This is the only place and the only site that you can do that at. So if you have that home game that maybe is broken apart, if you have it that maybe a few people have moved away from, and or you want to start it off, this is the perfect thing. Let PokerStars do the work for you, and you just play the game. See you on PokerStars.net, and check out those home games.
Here at the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship at Caesars Palace with one of the big shots of Caesars Entertainment's Poker World, Seth Polansky, who's the communications director for the World Series of Poker. Welcome back to the Final Table.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for lying right off the top. I like
it. You're welcome, and I can't tell you how excited we are about the circuit event that we have coming up in St. Louis. March 31st will be a night event, and then the ring events start on April 1st, and we've got 2 weeks, and I think we're going to have a big year based on what you guys have done in some other towns.
Yeah, I think the point system with the national championship right back here at Caesars Palace at the end of May for anyone who participates in the circuits and either wins the main event or is the casino champion, which is really defined by having the best ring event series, playing in multiple events and getting the most points for high finishes. So it's really been received well around the country. We're on our ninth circuit stop right now, and we can't wait to be in St. Louis not too long from now.
Yeah, the St. Louis one starts in just a few weeks. Now, you've been through nine of these, and you've had some massive turnouts, especially in some of the opening days and some of the $300 and $500 ones. I can't even remember what the record is, like 1300 and some they had up in Hammond.
They had 1600 at
16,
Hammond.
Oh, my gosh, that's unbelievable. And these guys are playing down, and then some of them are going to come out here. Explain again about the structure you've got here for this national, because this really interests me, these winners coming out here to this one.
Yeah, so the national championships will feature the 100 top qualifiers, and you qualify. Some people are qualifying by winning the main event at their circuit or casino champion, or they're just accumulating enough points to be in the top 36 point getters through the course of all the circuits. So the 100 guys will come here, and we're doing essentially $1 million free roll where 100 players will play for $1 million and a World Series of Poker bracelet for the first time that's been tied into the circuit.
Now, let me ask you this. When they all get here, can they agree on a 100-way chop and take 10,000 each? Because that's a buy-in of the main event.
There you go.
And one link in the bracelet each?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, well, let's chop it 100 ways and we'll play for the bracelet.
It's the first time in my life I've ever heard of a 100-way chop that almost makes sense.
Typically. Well,
there was some tournament last year. I think it might have been at the Partouche Poker Tour in France where they chopped it 23 ways.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous. I remember hearing that. Yeah. Typically, when we have a bracelet on the line, people battle it out. for that at the end of the day. And I think it's $500,000 to the winner of this event. So it's a nice payday to get there.
Speaking of France, you guys are moving the World Series of Poker Europe there. Why are you leaving London and going to Paris?
We just decided French is a new hot market. Like the UK, when we started there, you know, the online poker had been there and it was a growing market. And it's now France is a market that we want to help see grow and take off. And we had Antoine Saut in the main event final table a couple of years ago, and it's really sparked some interest there. And we found a great location. I mean, this is a location where the Cannes Film Festival is held. It's like the premier hotel and casino right on the water, a beautiful location. People are getting a little tired of London. And to add to that is we can double the capacity, so that's a big thing too. World Series of Poker Europe, as great as it was in London, we were limited in space, and it wasn't the best environment. And so
now France. Tell us the real reason. You're tired of English food.
Correct. I prefer croissants over, I don't know what they served in London, but you're right, it wasn't too edible.
The fact that you said you didn't know what they served in London really, really strikes home.
Okay. How much fish and chips can you eat, right?
Yeah. What's the last time you ever said to somebody, let's go out for English food tonight?
That's right.
Even in London.
Yes.
We used to, well, where you held the event over there, we go by behind the Empire to the Oriental Strip across there, you know, and that's what we'd eat.
Yeah.
So we go to London to eat Oriental food.
Yeah. People know Chinatown and Indian food. They don't know English food.
Exactly. Right. And I come to St. Louis for ribs and toasted ravioli.
Next time you get there, they're both on me.
Nice. Nice.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
tell us about the rest of the circuit thus far.
It's been tremendous. We really branched out of the Harrah's Caesars portfolio a little bit and brought new properties along, and Choctaw Durant outside the Dallas area in Oklahoma and Florida with this one, the Palm Beach Kennel Club. And a lot of people are dying to have poker in their market, so we want to figure out a way to keep getting poker to them at affordable prices. I mean, that's the other thing we heard, is sort of the $300 to $1,500 price range seems to fit a lot of people well, and we standardize the structures at all the events and standardize the events themselves, so people know what they're getting. They're getting deep structures, you know, good value for their money, and some good fame, because we brought television along some of our stops as well.
It's unbelievable the way poker is growing. You guys have handled this well. I think you hit a home run. When it first came out, I wondered about it a little bit, reducing it down to the $1,500. It is definitely. Your $300 buy-ins are just massive now. How much more can this thing expand? How big is this going to get? What are you going to have for the main event in 2 or 3 years? You know, 20,000 people in this thing?
Yeah, it's interesting to see what it's going to do to our series. But we do see that transition happening. People mm-hmm. start out in their local town. They get comfortable there. And they make friends and more in poker, and they set a trip to come out here, a mancation in ways, as guys call it, to try for the first time, and they may play a lower $1,000 mm-hmm. or $1,500 buy-in event here. I mean, what people don't realize, we had 73,000 entrants in the World Series of Poker last year. People play an average of 1.8 events. The World Series of Poker is not made up of the greatest poker players in the world only playing these events, primarily. You know, they make up for that 1.8 average mm-hmm. is weighted because of all the pros. But most people come out here for one event, for one weekend, that sort of thing, and get a taste of it all. And some of them go home quite famous, like John Duhamel or some others.
Like Mr. Phillips.
Well, but the thing of it is, it's getting so tiered now. That you have your home leagues and your poker leagues and your circuit events and what they have at Harrah's of St. Louis there, where they run it every month, and a winner gets a seat out here. So many people are going to start qualifying from this thing. I really think you're going to have a massive amount in a few years. This thing is just going 7,300 last year, 65 the year before. I mean, what's it going to be, 8,000 this year?
Are you confident in an 8,000 number?
You know, it's always so hard to predict, because I think the one big drawback in my mind to the main event, and I wish we could solve this better, I think it's now too long of a tournament between four opening days, and it's really a two-week commitment if you want to play in this thing. So not only do you have to have $10,000, you have to be able to take 2 weeks off work potentially and those things. And obviously the further you go down the pay scale, or the longer you advance in the event, it's more worthwhile to try to find the time off work, and usually have accommodating bosses. But primarily, 95% of the public out there that plays in this event does not have the time to dedicate to play it. So we have four starting days, then two day twos, then an off day before day three. So conceivably, some people have to commit to 8 days of their lives to playing this thing, and that's a drawback. So to get that number up, we got to figure out a way to reduce, you know, the starting days and the lag time potentially until we get in the money.
Yeah, that's what I was going to comment you just said there, because that's 8 days and you still have not made the money.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a huge thing there.
But interestingly, this year, the way Jack Effel, your tournament director, has set it up, you're only going to be playing until midnight on most days, whereas even just a couple of years ago when Dennis was there in the 08 main event,
yeah,
you played in the first few days till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Every day, absolutely.
So is I know you're trying to do it because stamina is a factor and all of that, but are you hurting yourself by shortening the play day?
The levels never really change for the main event because of television. In fact, they like to back end things to make sure that there's sort of enough play going to take place at the critical time. So we never played more than five levels actually in the main event based on 2 hour levels.
Mm-hmm.
It just took a lot longer to film and get done. In fact, we switched to kind of four levels for television. Mm-hmm. Last year's main event. So we do, that's where I feel like there is ways. Problem is you can't have three start days for the main event. It doesn't work in merging fields into day twos based on not knowing the numbers. That's the problem with poker to me. If we could get pre-registration as mandatory so we knew how many people we had,
that way
we could plan better and save everyone time and expense in other areas. But, of course, we all know poker players, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't care what you do. You are not going to get 1A to fill up first. It's not going to happen. Yeah. And part of it's that whole thing about how many days you're going to spend here. Because if you do play 1A and you make it to day two, you may play, you may get 5 days off in between there, and who has that?
Correct.
Well, the only option, and it may not be a good one, the only option I can see just off the cuff here talking about it, is you have 4 weekends in June. Is it possible to, on during the weekend to have day 1A, day 1B, 1C, and 1D, each coming those, so that what you start out in July then is day two, and that's your long streak. People come out for a weekend, they find out if they make day two, they're just there for the weekend, for that Saturday or Sunday, whatever, and that's your qualifying, and that's how you go.
It's funny, we did this analysis, we looked at that,
okay,
and trying to work it out where there was a piece of the main event essentially scattered throughout the series,
sure,
until you really hit the money, but for various reasons, we didn't think it worked. In other words, if a guy comes to play for a weekend,
yeah,
and that's what he did, and decides to try to see if he wins his way, well, now he's got another trip to come back, and he still hasn't made the money. He's only made day two, which is not anywhere close to the money, and he's now gone through a whole other trip. So we're a little concerned that people are going to construe that as Caesars trying to find a way to extract more hotel room nights and travel out of people.
Because you have a lot of trouble filling your hotels during the World Series of Poker.
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't read logical.
To me, you know, we can now seat about 3,800 players a day.
Yeah.
So if we had two starting days, we could, there's 7,600. And conceivably, we could figure out a way to use Caesar's Palace and other places on those days.
Yeah.
And we could make maybe 4,200 a day, 4,500, so we could accommodate, you know, 8,200 to 9,000.
I can see a lot of logistic problems there, though. You're also talking about a huge number of dealers. You're talking about a huge number, an increase everywhere incrementally across there. If you're trying to put 4,000 people playing there, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You'd have to shut down everything else.
And we didn't like some of those logistics of being at satellite properties, in essence,
yeah,
and breaking tables, and do people show up at that place trying to get in, or having to show up at the Rio and then be transferred to another property.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
when we looked at all these things logistically, you know, there really isn't a better way to skin this cat right now. I mean, there may be a scenario where we take over another ballroom at the Rio, get another 100 tables or so there, and then know we have room for sort of a 10,000-person tournament and be comfortable that we won't exceed that number. Of course, we don't want any scenario where anyone gets shut out again,
right,
but it's funny because it still really exists. There's no real solution to, if everyone wants to show up on day 1D, that we won't have the same problems because you only have so much space. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, we hope 8,000 people show up, to get back to your question, Paul. It's not inconceivable, but I think these things, the way it can grow, I think it's hard based on the time.
Well, I think even if you don't get that, which would effectively be a 10% increase from 7,300 to 8,000, I think even if you don't get that in the main event, based on what you're doing in your circuit events, where you know Jimmy Sommerfeld, one of your tournament directors, told me, you're up 20% in a lot of these locations with people showing up, not just for the main, but for the 340s and the 550s and those. I think those earlier events, the $1,000 weekend events you do in the 1500s, and even maybe some of the other non-no-limit hold'em things, I think you're going to have a huge year.
20% increase boggles the mind with the numbers you have already over those 58 tournaments. Oh, my gosh.
And that's what we were up last year in attendance at the World Series of Poker. 20% is crazy across the board. And we have made more adjustments this year, really made the weekend tracks about the weekend warriors, guys coming in for weekend trips so they can get in, play a couple events, and get home. Or get in the money well enough that they can call in sick on Monday, those sort of things. Then the midweek about being for the pro player.
So what do you do? It's not blue flu. What would you call this one?
A good beat.
There you go. Okay. All right.
Tell us one event that you have on the schedule this year, maybe it's a new one, that you think is really going to get people's attention. Not just the main event, obviously, or even the 1Ks, but something in between there. Maybe it's a mixed game or something else.
Or a new structure of it or something.
Yeah, that you've added in that you think, wow, this is really going to be the new hot thing that people are going to be talking about.
Yeah, I think all the six-handed events were very intriguing to me, and we've increased the amount of six-handed events we're having. And I love it because they create more action. You know, you got to play more hands. They're a little more psychology involved.
Heck yeah.
And so we've sprinkled those throughout better and not jammed them in places. And I think for, you know, whether it's PLO or No Limit Hold'em or Limit, you're going to get some options to play shorthand and watch these guys who play a lot of it online to see how they transition in live tournaments and how they do.
Cool. Well, I mean, we've had Flipple Draw. We've had, I don't know what, I can't even name some of the new things that have come up with it within the last 24 months and the new combinations of it. The biggest you've got right now is an 8 mix. Is there any possibility of going to a 10 or a 12?
We got a 10-game mix on the schedule this year that includes Badoogie.
Oh, my gosh.
for the first time.
That's called the Greg Raymer event.
There you go.
Yeah. There was a lot of push from our Players Advisory Council to figure out a way to get Badoogie back in. Came up with this 10-game mix format. I know that it's gaining in popularity. I think it's a $2,500 buy-in, so it's affordable.
Cool.
And that sort of thing. So that's going to be an interesting event. I know Jack Effel's really looking forward to that one.
I know they're always thinking of new things, and Jack's always thinking of new things, but when you guys get to the $10,000 Pass the Trash Championship, you will have gone too far.
I'm wanting pineapple. I'm telling you. Where's pineapple?
Well, we got one that may be up Dennis's alley.
Uh-oh.
$1 million buy-in event.
And what's the game?
Okay.
Well, whatever Dennis wants to play for $1 million.
Tiddlywinks. Tiddlywinks. There we go.
That's the one where you immediately want to launch to the top of the all-time earnings list. Unfortunately, you're going to lose to Eric Seidel.
Yeah, I mean, I started saying eating contest, but now I've looked around here and no.
We did do a meatball eating contest at Rio last year over the World Series. That's quite fascinating to watch Joey Chestnut, the hot dog champion, eat 80 meatballs in 5 minutes or whatever.
Not at Cafe Martirano, not their meatballs.
Well, they had to be regulation size, but it was that whole competitive eating.
How big those are in that restaurant at the Rio.
Yeah.
There's no human alive who could eat 80 of those in one sitting.
I believe they were 6 ounces to conform with, you know, specific standards that I'm not quite familiar with, but I got to sample, so I know they were smaller.
Wow. Well, Seth, we appreciate you coming by. It's great to see you. And, you know, we're looking forward, as you are, to the circuit event in St. Louis and then the big deal out here in Las Vegas.
Very good. Us, too. Thanks for having me, guys, and good luck.
Anytime.
Good luck at the WSOP circuit.
As Seth Polansky, Communications Director for the World Series of Poker, joining us here at the final table with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I am Paul Harris. Coming up next, the 2008 Main Event World Champion, Peter Eastgate, back from his hiatus. Why did he go away, and why is he back? You'll find out when the final table continues next on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. With our podcasts, you can subscribe to them via iTunes or get them anytime you want from Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And by the way, if you go there, you can also listen to any of our previous interviews from the last 2 years. We've got the complete list of all those guests on the right side of the page when you click the Final Table Radio Show on thechipleader.com.
I don't own a suit or a tie, and collared shirts make me itch in places a collar shouldn't be able to make me itch. And I'm not a guy who can play poker on a full stomach, because like swimming after eating, I start to cramp up and give away my tells. I can't pull off a lie to myself, my friends, or my girlfriend, but I can lie to my opponents. And when I slow play a hand of poker, it's not because I don't know what I'm doing. It's so everyone else at the table thinks I have a terrible hand, when I'm actually holding an epic hand that will make grown men cry big boy tears. And that's fun to watch. I'm a chip stacking, weakness attacking, going to be wearing a World Series of Poker bracelet, World Series of Poker player. I'm a player.
Come to Harris St. Louis, March 31st through April 12th, and take your shot at a bracelet in the World Series of Poker circuit event. Meet poker stars Greg Raymer and Dennis Phillips, April 8th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF or visit 888-BETS-OFF.org. Must be 21 years or older to gamble.
Welcome back to the final table, and I am very happy to say we are now being joined by Peter Eastgate, a gentleman who I got to know in 08, who we played a lot of hands with, a lot of hours and hours of poker.
You know, as I recall, the last time you two sat at a poker table together, you both became millionaires.
It was a good time.
Yeah, well, that's not actually true, because the last time we played against each other, like I was knocked out of the main event. In 2009, in 78th place or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you had played at the same table in that one
too?
Oh, and, I didn't know that.
And actually, at the PCA, I think it was the 5K.
Yeah.
We also, Peter ended up winning it. I ended up coming in like 11th or 13th or something like that. I don't remember. Not as good as Peter again. But yeah, we've been at several tables together, several tournaments together in Run Deep.
Well, it's good to have you back together, and good to have you back at a poker table.
Yeah, and we both made the top eight of the NBC last year.
That's true.
And you made the semifinal.
That's true. That time I actually came out ahead. I think it's the first time I've ever come out ahead of Peter in a tournament.
you also came ahead of me in the main event 2009.
Well, that's true. That's true.
How does it feel to be back?
It feels good. Like, I love to play poker again, and the reason why I went into a hiatus like 10 months ago was because I was fed up with poker. But now I have the lust and desire to play again, so I enjoy it.
That's great. Have you been playing online at all during the hiatus?
No, I haven't really played any kind of poker during the hiatus.
Well, you're back now into the swing of things. You just beat one of the best heads-up players in the world with Chris Ferguson, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So how did Copenhagen go? How's this one going? Do you think the hiatus actually helped your game in any way?
I don't think it's necessarily helped my game, especially not technically, because, well, I haven't worked on my game.
Okay.
But nevertheless, I've worked on my motivation, where I'm 100% focused to get back on track and play my best every time you sit down, because poker is really about like your mental state of mind. And if you're not really feeling for it or like playing your best, you can play incredibly bad. So it's really, really important that you're disciplined and motivated.
I think most people don't realize how grueling and how mentally tough you have to be to play poker, especially at the level that Peter plays at. And if your mind does wander, if you get distracted, it can be a huge, huge difference. One hand is all it takes in many of these tournaments. One hand, one misplay, and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mentally, it's hard to stay focused for hour after hour.
So I'm curious about the hiatus where you didn't play poker, but you have friends who play poker, and they want to probably talk poker with you. How was that for you?
Well,
did you have to say to them, no?
No, I didn't have to say that. And, like, I didn't mind talking about poker theoretical questions during that period, because I wasn't really, hating poker or anything. Like, I just didn't want to play. I just wanted to do other things, which wasn't that substantial. Like, my lifestyle didn't really change that much during that period. I kept a lot of poker friends that we didn't really talk much about poker. We talked about different things.
Yeah. If they're good friends, they're going to respect what you were going through and say, you know what? We don't have to get into this every time we see them. we're more than just poker playing buddies. We're buddies.
With good friends, you can talk about everything. You don't necessarily need to talk about poker show.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big issue.
Yep.
Excellent. Are you still in London?
I'm still living in London, yeah.
All righty. Is there any place in London in particular that you play a lot now? Do you play any live games there? Or
no, I don't really play any live games. I plan to play the EVT of London in October, but that's like a half a year from now, so I'm not really thinking about that.
Have you plotted out your poker year?
No, I take it tournament by tournament.
Well, I have a feeling we'll see you back in Vegas in July.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a given.
Yeah, the main
other
event.
Than that, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so what did you do with your downtime?
Well, I work out, I read, I go to the cinema, I hang out with friends, but I don't have a job, and I don't do any kind of educational stuff, so I have a lot of spare time.
Yeah. Is that a good thing to have at the beginning and then gets a little, what am I going to do today?
It gets a little bit what am I going to do today? If you're not good at occupying yourself or finding some hobbies, it could be a big hassle to to spend your time.
Yeah.
So basically I need to find some hobbies and I've been looking for that for 5 years.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, this actually hits home a little bit. One of the things that I found out when I suddenly started traveling around and playing these other places, I was so concentrating on poker that I was playing, I would play satellites, I would play cash, I would play the tournaments. I get busted out of a tournament, I immediately go find something else to do. The first time I went down to the PCA, I spent 10, 12 days down there and never once touched the ocean, never once went outside, hardly ever left it.
I used to make fun of him when he'd go to all these tournaments. I said, you were on a beach and you didn't even touch the sand?
Well, so. I did the exact same thing at the PCA 2009. I got to Bahamas, the Nassau Airport. I took a cab directly out to the Atlantis Resort. And I didn't leave the resort for 10 or 12 days playing
same
poker
thing.
All the time. When I wasn't playing live poker, I was playing online poker.
Yeah.
And so. 12 days later, I got a cab back to the airport and went back home.
And again, that's why you can get... It takes the fun out of the game if you're not careful.
Yeah. Hey,
you need to balance things. That's
absolutely
incredibly
do.
Important.
Incredibly.
Yeah.
And so now when I go to South America or something like that, I try to go there a day or two ahead of time or stay a day or two afterwards and take in some of the local sites and just travel around and talk to the local people. I mean, it can be so easy. If Argentina is known for wine, we'll go to a vineyard and, just find out. It's kind of curiosity, a lot of it.
Exactly.
And you're 100% right, balancing your life. And I didn't do that for a while, and I'm glad I am now. So, I can see exactly what you're coming from. It makes perfect sense to me.
Now, Peter, I know you did a lot of traveling in the year after your victory because you had to go for PokerStars reasons or because you wanted to play in a lot of big events, both in Europe and here in the United States. In the downtime during your hiatus, did you do any traveling, go to any exotic places?
Well, I went to the Himalayas for an 8-day trekking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that was really cool, and I would recommend any other healthy person to do the same thing.
Why did he look at us when he said that?
By healthy, I mean if you don't have any knee injuries or whatever. I don't imply overweight or whatever, or age or whatever.
No problem.
No, we're kidding.
Yeah,
but tell us about the trip.
Well, it was a fun trip. It took 5 or 6 days to get to base camp, which was in the altitude of 4,300 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took 2.5 days to get back. We had some Sherpas carrying our luggage or bags. So that was a big relief.
Yeah. Wow.
And what do you do once you get to the base camp? Are you there for a day or two, or is it just we're at the base camp, okay, let's go?
We were there for a day, and we watched the sun come up. And then we went back downhill.
That's still an adventure I wouldn't mind doing sometime.
Pretty fulfilling, I bet.
I bet so.
And
cool.
One of the best things about it is that you have no internet connection or mobile connection or whatever. You're completely disconnected with the outside world. That's a pretty funny thing.
Yeah.
No poker playing.
No
poker playing.
No texting.
No stress factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who'd you go with?
Two of my good buddies.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Any place else on your travels?
Well, I've been around. I went to New York for 2 weeks just vacationing.
Mm-hmm.
Denmark, where I have my family and friends.
Yep.
Better question, any place that you want to go? I want to go up to the fjords up there sometime. I've never been through those, and I've heard they're just gorgeous and everything like that up in the Scandinavian countries. And I've never been up through there. So that's one for me. Do you have any place
Well, I did the day trekking in Himalayas, and I definitely want to do more of those, like in the Andes or in the Alps in Europe, so whatever. Like, I want to do a lot of those kind of things.
Okay, cool.
Great. But at the moment, I'm knee injured, so I can't really do that.
Oh, you blew out your knee?
Yeah, I over-exercised.
Mm. I thought I was going to say it was a bad card on the river, but no, okay, never mind.
Let me get back to poker for a second. Obviously, you're known for No Limit Hold'em, winning it in the main event of the World Series of Poker. You played other games. Are you playing those other games as well? Are you working on getting better at the other games?
I'm playing the other games pretty terribly, and I'm not really working on improving my game in the other games. So, but obviously, I want to get better at those games as well, but like, I prefer just to play the No Limit Hold'em tournaments because that's what I excel at.
2008 World Series of Poker main event champion Peter Eastgate back in the game and joining us here at the final table with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening. That's all the show we have for you this week. We'll join you next Tuesday at 3 live from Harrah's St. Louis. Don't forget to go to harrahs.com/STL poker for information on the upcoming World Series of Poker circuit event and go to thechipleader.com for more on Dennis Phillips and for all of our podcasts from the last 2 years, which you can subscribe to via iTunes or find on thechipleader.com or every Tuesday at 3 here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.